Elsewhere in the chaotic streets of the Parade of the Endless, Finley Campbell, Evangeline Schreck, and Julian Skye followed young Jack Random as he led a small army of rebels and underground supporters toward the Imperial ground troops' main command bunker in the city. The bunker was supposed to contain the main decision-makers and strategists of the planetside military. And despite everything the underground had done to try to cut them off from their forces, they were still very much in charge. So all that was left was to shut them down the hard way, by brute force. So Finley slogged his way through the streets, shooting at everything wearing a uniform. He had a strong feeling that breaking into the bunker was going to be a real bastard. He didn't even have any of the incredible maze people with him this time. Just one, possibly rejuvenated Esper, Julian Skye. Still, they were being led by the legendary young Jack Random, hero and savior, who apparently could do no wrong. According to all reports, he'd practically turned back the Imperial invasion on Mistworld single-handed. Maybe he'd think of something. Evangeline was lost in her own thoughts. She was back on Golgotha again, back in the Parade of the Endless, not far from her father. Her hated, despised father, who loved her as a woman, not a daughter. Evangeline had fled to Shannon's world, but now she was back. And it wouldn't be long before Gregor Schreck found out, and then the threats of torture or death to her friend Penny would begin again. Evangeline scowled, barely seeing the crowd around her. Maybe she could get the underground leaders to promise Gregor's safety in return for Penny's release unharmed. They owed her a favor, after all she'd done for them. If Penny was still alive. She wouldn't put it past her father to have killed Penny in her absence, out of spite. He was quite capable of such a thing. In which case, she would find him and kill him, and to hell with the consequences. Finley would understand. He knew all about revenge. Julian Skye was thinking about revenge, too. About B.B. Chojiro in particular. He had loved her with all his heart, and she betrayed him to the torturers and the mind techs. And sometimes it seemed all he lived for now was a chance to make her pay. Now, at last, they were in the same city again. When the rebellion was over, he'd find her, no matter where she hid, and then he'd make her suffer as he had. Or, maybe, he'd fall on his knees and promise her anything if only she'd love him again. He still dreamed that, sometimes. In his worst nightmares. The three had fought their way through the madness in the streets, taking on troops, security men, and anything else the Empire could throw at them. At every turn there were more armed men, as the increasingly desperate Imperials struggled to stop the rebel forces advancing on the command center. Men fell and the push went on, and the command center drew slowly nearer. Finally, the command center's steel and stone bunker appeared at the end of the street before them. The sight gave new heart to the rebels, and they roared their triumph as they surged forward behind young Jack, driving the demoralized defenders back and back. Only the narrowness of the street and the fact that there was nowhere for the troops to run prevented a complete rout. And so the troops fought viciously, like the cornered rats they were, and through sheer desperation, again slowed the rebel advance to a crawl. The struggle went on, tides in the fighting moving this way and that, and Toby Schreck and his cameraman Flynn were there to cover it all, broadcasting live to the watching Empire. They hovered precariously above the crowd on a commandeered gravity sled, just high enough to keep out of range of the fighting, well, still close enough to get all the gory details in close-up. Flynn sent his camera swooping back and forth over the surging crowd, searching out the best footage, while Toby hung over the edge of the sled, narrating a breathless commentary with a voice grown rough through smoke inhalation and overuse. Both men were using every upper in Toby's collection to keep them sharp and alert after so long in the air. And they had long since abandoned impartiality and distance for an almost hysterical need to capture history in the making. They both knew they'd never cover so important a story again. They spied the familiar faces of Finley, Evangeline, and Julian, waved cheerfully, and called for them to smile for the camera. Finley gave a short but very emphatic answer, indicating that he was rather busy just at the moment, and Toby made a mental note to edit that bit out of any future repeat broadcasts. Flynn kept his camera rocketing back and forth, getting as much coverage of the bloodletting as he could. The viewers knew what they liked and had to be coaxed to keep watching, even if this was history in the making. Young Jack hacked his way through an army of defenders, calling his followers on to victory. His enemies fell before him, and he trampled them underfoot, still smiling. His clothes were soaked with blood, none of it his. Near the end of the street, with the command center only yards away, he paused just long enough to throw a smile and a wink at Flynn's hovering camera. Toby steered the sled as close to young Jack as he could. When in doubt, follow the story. And so, he and Flynn were perfectly placed to see the grenade come arcing out of the defenders and tumble almost unhurriedly through the air toward young Jack. It passed right in front of Flynn's camera, hung on the air for a long moment at the top of its loop, and then dropped directly toward young Jack. The grenade exploded right in front of him, and his body took the full force of the explosion. The blast threw him to one side, crashing through friend and foe alike, and slammed him into the high stone wall that overlooked that side of the street. The wall swayed and then fell forward, collapsing on top of the people below. Dozens of other people, rebels and troops, had been hit by shrapnel from the grenade and lay screaming in the street. Finley, Evangeline, and Julian had been protected behind Julian's hastily thrown up force shield. As it dropped, Finley quickly yelled for rebels to come forward and hold back the troops while he dug through the rubble of the fallen wall. He bent over the rubble and started pulling away bricks, and soon Evangeline and Julian were there to help him. Flynn's camera hovered overhead, getting it all. Finley and Evangeline dug down through the pitiful scraps and remnants, arms bloody to the elbow, and finally they came to what was left of young Jack Random. For a second they just stood there, stunned. And then Finley turned and glared back at Toby and Flynn.
Cut off the live feed! Do it now!
Toby leaned off the edge of the sled to argue, looked past Finley, and saw what he saw, and made a sharp chopping gesture to Flynn. The cameraman nodded and cut off the live broadcast, but kept the camera in place, still recording. Toby moved the gravity sled in over Finley and Evangeline as they bent over the revealed body of the thing called Young Jack Random. The force of the grenade's explosion had torn away much of his skin, revealing the gleaming blue steel beneath. His face was gone, leaving only a metal skull. The eye sockets were empty, but the white teeth remained, giving the metal skull a disturbingly human smile. Young Jack Random was a Fury, a spy from Shub, a machine in the shape of a man, hiding under a human appearance. And it was still alive. The lower part of the body was seriously crushed by the fallen wall, and one arm was missing, but the torso and head were pretty much intact. The Fury raised its metal head slightly and nodded to Finley and Evangeline.
All right, I'm a machine. But that doesn't mean we can't still be friends. You need me, or who I'm pretending to be. I can be repaired. Cover my face and no one will know the difference. Some of the truth is bound to leak out, but we can just tell everyone that I'm a cyborg. An augmented man. They'll buy that. After all, Jack Random's supposed to have been through. You need me, Campbell. The rebels will follow a hero like me, or they won't follow someone like you. So, get a cloak to wrap me in, stick me on the Shrek's gravity sled, and I'll lead your people right into the command center.
Do you really think that any member of humanity would follow a thing from Shub? Do you think we would? You represent the enemies of humanity, sworn to wipe us out to the last man, woman, and child. No wonder you enjoy the slaughter here so much. And what would you do after the rebellion is over? Be a party to our plans and hopes? Just when we're at our most vulnerable? Do you really think we'd let a metal wolf like you into our fold?
You don't really have much of a choice. My systems are already repairing themselves, and you don't have any weapons here strong enough to destroy me. The grenade took me by surprise. It was unexpectedly powerful for its size. But soon, I will be operating at acceptable efficiency levels again. And if you will not help me to pass as Jack Random, then I will fulfill my secondary programming and kill every human here. What will that do to your push on the command center? Like it or not, you're stuck with me.
Like hell. Julian, stamp this tin soldier flat.
Gladly.
Julian called up his Psystorm, compressed and focused it into a hammer of pure force, and brought it slamming down on the crippled Fury. The human-shaped machine flattened out like a starship had fallen on it. Julian smiled coldly as the metal shape crumpled under the pressure of his mind. The Esper concentrated, and the flattened metal rolled itself into a ball, shrinking and further compacting, until all that remained was a solid sphere of metal, with no trace of life left in it. Julian smiled again.
Repair that, you bastard.
Finley and Evangeline buried the sphere under a pile of body parts. Julian looked up at Flynn's camera, still hovering overhead, and scowled thoughtfully.
Oh no, not a camera, please! We don't have another!
We can't let this piece of news get out. No one must ever know.
We know how to keep our mouths shut. This wouldn't be the first piece of film I've had to bury. Ask the Campbell. He'll vouch for me.
I don't know if I'd go that far. But I think we can trust him to understand that if this piece of film ever surfaces again, there will be a queue of people waiting to kill him in slow and interesting ways. Right, Shrek?
Couldn't have put it better myself. I've seen you people in action. I don't want you coming after me. It doesn't really matter. I've already got enough great footage to make me immortal.
What about me? Don't I get to be immortal too?
I said immortal, not immoral. You just point the camera and leave the thinking to me.
I am an artist. It's in my contract.
No, I know what you are. Now shut up and point the camera.
Bully. You wait till your next direct-to-camera. I'll make you look really podgy.
Finley, we have to get our people moving again, before they have time to think about what's happened here. If they panic, the whole push will fall apart.
Got it.
Finley stepped onto the rubble so all the rebels could see him.
Jack Random is dead. The Empire killed him. Are you going to let his death be for nothing? Or will you fight on as he would have wanted? Then follow me to death or glory!
It was as basic as that, but it worked. The rebels roared their defiance to the Empire and surged forward again, howling for revenge. Finley led the way, with Evangeline and Julian at his sides. He'd never doubted that the rebels would follow him, in Random's name. Sometimes a rebel leader can be a greater inspiration dead than alive. The defending troops had held their ground while they thought Random's death would demoralize the rebels, but the new, even more determined attack was just too much for them. Outnumbered and outfought, they cracked and turned and ran, some throwing away their weapons to show they were no longer a part of the war, and as quickly as that, the battle was over. The troops ran in all directions, desperate to escape the killing grounds, and the rebels cut down those who didn't run fast enough. Finley stormed forward, heading for the huge steel doors that were the only entrance to the command center bunker. Disruptors built into the bunker walls opened up, but Julian deflected the beams with his Esp until rebel sharpshooters had blown the guns out of their emplacements. And then they were all at the door.
Julian, get this door open.
I'm on it.
Julian concentrated, ignoring the familiar headache growing behind his temples, and hit the door with a psychokinetic hammer blow that punched the door right out of its supports and back into the bunker. The rebels cheered, and Finley led the way through the opening. He hadn't got far before he came to a sudden halt. Evangeline and Julian, close behind, almost crashed into him. Before them, guarding the entry corridor with a drawn sword, stood a single figure in an anonymous tunic, with a featureless black steel helm covering his head. A familiar sight to anyone who'd ever watched the fights in the arenas. It was the undefeated champion himself, the Masked Gladiator.
You. Of course it's me. I've always been loyal to the Iron Throne, come what may. Which means you have to get past me to get any further. And one man in the right place can stop an army if he's good enough. And the Masked Gladiator has never been defeated.
Don't do this. I don't want to have to fight you.
They shall not pass. No exceptions. Not even you, Finley.
The hell you say?
Julian stepped forward, and his face contorted with an anger so overwhelming he was almost unrecognizable.
I've waited a long time for this, you bastard. You killed my brother, Oryx Sky.
I've killed a lot of people. I don't remember names anymore.
I remember.
And Julian Sky lashed out with his mind. An irresistible force hit the Masked Gladiator like a hammer, smashing him off his feet. He hung in midair, feet kicking helplessly above the ground, and blood flew from every joint in his armor, as the body within was crushed by a cold, vengeful force. He didn't cry out, but eventually he stopped convulsing, and Julian dropped him. He hit the floor hard and lay still. Blood pooled around him. Julian leaned over him, breathing heavily. Blood was running thickly from one of his nostrils. He spat on the featureless helmet.
That was for you, Oryk.
He started forward into the command center, and the rebels poured after him, cheering the man who'd beaten the undefeated Masked Gladiator. Toby and Flynn hurried after them on foot. None of them even noticed Finley and Evangeline kneel beside the fallen man. Finley waited until the last of the rebels had passed by, and then gently removed the dying man's helmet, revealing the blood-smeared face of George McCracken, the original Masked Gladiator. The man who taught Finley everything he knew, and then allowed the younger man to replace him in the arena. George tried to smile up at Finley and Evangeline, but his teeth were red with his own blood.
No. We'll never know whether you could have beaten me, Finley.
I killed his brother. I'm so sorry, George. I never meant... Why did you go back to the arena? I thought you retired.
Someone had to be the Masked Gladiator after you left. There wasn't anyone ready to take your place. Damn. I'm hurt bad, Finley. That Esper bastard really screwed me up.
He stopped, as though considering what to say. Finley waited, and only after a moment realized that George McCracken was dead. He closed the man's eyes and got to his feet. Evangeline stood up with him and put a comforting hand on his arm. He didn't notice.
Julian doesn't need to know. Let him think he killed his brother's killer. It's simpler that way.
For the moment. But what happens if he ever finds out the truth? That you were his brother's killer? And he killed an innocent man.
No one's innocent anymore. And what's one more secret to the likes of us?
All across the planet of Golgotha, in towns and cities and starports, the rebels moved unstoppably forward, driving back the Imperial forces on all fronts. The Empire's one trump card, the huge war machines, now stood dead and lifeless, empty metal shells with nothing to guide them. The Imperial troops looked defeat in the face and reacted in the only way they knew how. They broke out the biggest weapons they had and opened fire on everyone who wasn't them. They cut down rebels and civilians alike and flooded the streets with blood. They took crowds of women and children hostage, used them as human shields, and threatened to execute them in batches of 10 if the rebels didn't back off. They blew up important installations and power plants and hospitals rather than let the rebels take them. They destroyed whole towns and their populations in order to save them. All over the world, the rebel advances slowed and stopped. The rebels were willing to give their own lives for victory, but faced with the responsibility for mass slaughter of civilians, they hesitated and were lost. The rebellion faltered, and suddenly, everything seemed in the balance again. And that was when the Mater Mundi manifested again, all across the planet. Our mother of all souls, the ultimate Esper, slammed into every Esper's mind. And simultaneously, hundreds of thousands of Espers suddenly transformed and transfigured into a whole new order of being. Linked into one great mastermind, they acted as one. The Psi storms flashed through towns and cities all over Golgotha, sweeping away the Imperial troops while not touching the rebels or civilians. Telepathic storms swept through the troops, jumping from mind to mind, washing away sanity and memories, and leaving nothing behind. In other places, Esper-driven nightmares ran riot through helpless minds, and hardened soldiers tore out their own eyes rather than see what they were being shown. Other troops gunned down their comrades, then turned their guns on themselves. And as quickly as that, the tide turned again, and resistance to the rebel forces was swept away. Mater Mundi looked upon her work and saw it to be good, and withdrew herself from the thousands of Espers. The rebel forces mopped up the mess she'd left behind and took control of the towns and cities, whose populations praised them as saviors. The war on the surface was over. But the Mater Mundi wasn't finished yet. Manifesting through an old friend, Jenny Psycho, the Mater Mundi reached out and snagged two more useful souls and teleported all three of them to where they could do the most good. And in the general chaos, no one even noticed they'd gone. Satisfied that she'd done all that was necessary, the Mater Mundi shut herself down until she might be needed again. In Lionstone's court, hell had taken root and bloomed like a dark and poisonous flower. There were flames everywhere. The air was thick with the stench of sulfur, spilled blood, and cooked human flesh. Captured rebels had been impaled on rough wooden stakes or hung on traceries of metal thorns that slowly pulled them apart. Corpses of dead advisors hung from chains. Captain Silence, Investigator Frost, and Security Officer Stelmach made their way cautiously through the crimson-tinged mists of hell, carefully skirting the yellow sulfur fogs that belched up out of the glowing ash pits. They stuck close together, tried not to look around too much, and headed for Lionstone's spotlit throne by the most direct route. Small bones crunched under their boots from time to time. They looked like they came from birds or animals, or possibly small children. The three had been called back to Golgotha and then down to the Imperial Palace on direct orders from the Empress herself, using top emergency codes only ever to be used when the throne itself was endangered. So of course they came, ignoring the rebels and their battles, ignoring cries for help from beleaguered Imperial forces, driven by the urgency of their summons. They didn't know yet that the war on the surface had been lost, but it wouldn't have surprised them. They'd seen the live broadcasts from Viramond, and even the investigator had been shocked. Finally, they came to the Iron Throne. Jets of flame shot high up into the air, like fountains of fire, eerily silent, casting a crimson satanic aspect over Lionstone and her throne. Lionstone sat forward, right on the edge of her seat, staring grimly at the viewscreen floating before her, studying reports from the few imperially controlled channels still on the air, watching helplessly as her empire fell apart around her. Silence and Frost and Stelmach came to a halt before the Iron Throne and bowed deeply to her, and she acknowledged them with a mere flap of her hand. When she finally deigned to turn and look at them, her eyes were wide and staring, and her smile was strangely fixed, as though she'd forgotten just how one did such a thing.
So you're finally here, my captain, my investigator, my security officer, sworn to me to death and beyond. Traitors!
No, Your Majesty. We are loyal to you. We always have been.
Then why did you keep secrets from me? Why did you try and hide what you've become? Why didn't you tell me about the powers you gained on the Wolfling world?
Silence and Frost looked at each other, and then at Stelmach, who shook his head. He hadn't told. Silence looked back at Lionstone and kept his voice even and calm.
For a long time, we didn't understand what was happening to us. It seems our time in the Madness Maze, brief though it was enough to change us on levels we still don't fully comprehend. We have done our best to serve you faithfully while we struggled for some kind of control over our new abilities.
Huh. And what about you, security officer? I gave you specific orders to watch these two and report on them.
I've tried to do my duty as I saw best.
Stelmach's face was deathly pale, and his hands were shaking, but his gaze and his voice were unflinching.
It was not a simple matter. There were ambiguities to the situation.
Words.
Lionstone leaned back on her throne. Her cold eyes moved back and forth across the three of them.
Nothing but empty words. It's too late for such evasiveness now. I won't have it. The barbarians are pounding on the gates of Empire. I need weapons to hold them back while I plan how to undo my reverses. You're going to be those weapons. Tell me about your powers. Tell me everything, or die here at my feet.
Just for a moment, Silence considered defying her. She had no real power over them anymore. All the armed guards in her court couldn't compel him or Frost to do a single damn thing they didn't want to. Not after everything they'd become. But the moment passed, as he'd known it would. She was his empress. He and Frost had kept their powers to themselves out of a very real fear of ending up as lab rats. Possibly even vivisected lab rats. But the time for such weakness was past. He could recognize fate when it came knocking on his window. So he told the Empress, as clearly as he could, of the strange strengths and abilities and intuitions that he and Frost had manifested since their time on Lost Hayden. It took a while, not least because Lionstone kept interrupting, pressing him for details and explanations he didn't always have. As he spoke, two new figures appeared in the court, breasting the sulfurous mists on their way to the throne. First came Valentine Wolfe, the dandy in black with a long white face. He stopped a respectful distance away, quite happy to watch and listen while Silence spoke. His crimson mouth was stretched in its usual constant smile, and his heavily mascaraed eyes were fever-bright from the impact of the dozen drugs roaring through his veins. Valentine wasn't used to losing, and his recent reverses had stunned him. His response had been to amplify his whirling thoughts with stimulant after stimulant, trying to force his mind to come up with answers to his problems. The end result had been something of a chemical stalemate, where his thoughts crashed emptily together, canceling each other out. And so he'd come to court, not just for his own safety, but because that was, in the end, where all the real decisions of Empire were made. Whatever happened here, he was confident he'd find some way to turn it to his advantage. He always did.